have no idea what that sound is. Sorry, I don't know if anybody's home, but the Hoover's just turned on, so that's a bit scary. There's a ghost. Anyway.
Hello and welcome back to In The Frame. Before we get started, I just wanted to say how grateful I am that more of you than ever are listening to the podcast at the moment. I hope you've been enjoying this series, and thank you for all your comments about Tuesday's episode with Nikki Bentley. It was such an important discussion, and I checked in with Nikki yesterday, who said she has received so many lovely messages. I am so excited about today's guest. It was such a treat to sit down with the wonderful Lauren Byrne, who was starring as Jane Seymour in the UK tour of Six prior to the pandemic. Lauren was a swing in the UK tours of Sunny Afternoon and Beautiful, and is also a member of the girl group Remember Monday. Over the next few weeks, you can catch Lauren in a very exciting online concert called The Secret Society of Leading Ladies for the Barn Theatre, which gives you, the viewer, all the control. There's so much hype about it. It's going to be incredible. I was so excited to do this episode. We, of course, discussed all things Six, the story behind her leading ladies outfit, what she got up to, which was in Six form, and lots, lots more. Here's the interview. Lauren Byrne, you're in the frame.
I am. Look at me.
people can't see you actually physically are in the frame right now with your hands. how are you doing? Where are you at?
Right.
It's so up and down. I'm looking at the stuff. You've been doing so many different things, just scrolling through your social media and stuff. You've had so much going on. So it's just been extreme highs and lows, hasn't it? But where are you at
today?
What's happening?
Yeah. Today I'm doing okay, you know. I actually woke up this morning without an alarm. And that hasn't happened in a good few months. I either kind of sleep in until like way past noon and then feel like I've wasted the day, or I'm up early because of an alarm and I'm like all day long just trying to deal with the tiredness. So actually I woke up this morning feeling pretty sprightly, which was a change, and quite a nice change.
So
yeah, feeling okay. But yeah, it's been weird, because obviously I think social media is so deceptive, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure we'll chat about that at some point, but like, the, you know, online it probably does look like I've been doing quite a lot, but actually a lot of my days at the moment are sat on the couch watching RuPaul's Drag Race. So like,
I mean, we could talk for hours about what happened last night.
Oh my god, the tea. But yeah, so social media can definitely be deceptive, but it has been really nice to have some things to kind of, you know, get up out of bed for and do some fun like singing things and some kind of work things. And yeah, so it's all been those little kind of glimpses of normality have been really, really nice.
But I guess what I can't imagine is, obviously, you know, everyone listening, we all know how tough it's been and how nothing was happening for so long, but then we had that lovely pocket of opportunity where things were happening, and you know, you did that amazing concert in the West End and everyone's talking about it, and there were so many things. So to then go back, literally from performing the West End and getting amazing responses and stuff, to then being back on the sofa, it almost feels like harder, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, last year was, I almost feel like it is, I know everyone's been using this phrase, the new normal, but by now I kind of feel like I'm almost used to this version of the world, and it'll be more weird when we go back to what was normal a year ago. But yeah, like you say, you know, the kind of things that we were doing in that little pocket were so great. But before then, it felt like, you know, so obviously we broke up in March, like a summer holiday. so we, you know, COVID happened in March. And then kind of from that point, in the Six cast, at least, we were kind of always always thinking that we had something to go to in a couple of months' time. So first it was the drive through, and then it were, you know, and then that obviously got
the drive through.
The drive through. Drive through. Am I okay?
the drive in.
McDonald's drive through.
Although I would totally be here for a Six drive through.
You get to watch one number, and then you got to pass on
some extra riffs on that.
Drive drive-in. Gosh, maybe I'm not so sprightly as I thought today. But yeah, the drive-in. So we kind of thought we had that to, like, you know, that was in our mind's eye, like, oh, it's okay though, because that's coming up. And then obviously that got pulled, which was so gutting. And then, you know, then it was kind of talk of, oh, well, we might be going back in October anyway, so don't worry. So then it was still just like another couple of months. And we kind of had that a few times in a row, like a little dangled carrot that then just got pulled away. So, you know, that was really tough. And then obviously when I decided to leave the cast, that was a whole nother realm of tough, which, you know, I'm still I've got the FOMO big time. But actually now I feel like, because my mind is so set up in the fact that I'm like, okay, well, I'll be going back to work soon at some point, and I don't really even want to put a date in my mind, like, as to when that might happen, because it is just one of, I don't want another dangled carrot, you know. Just keeps getting pushed further and further back, which is the same for everyone. But I think for my own kind of sanity and mental health, I need to just, like, make myself busy and happy with other things rather than thinking,
totally,
oh, it's going to happen in another month or so and then push back again, you know.
Well, one thing that is happening is this concert that you've filmed. I mean, you've been doing lots of concerts and lots of projects. So when Mr. Ryan Carter, the genius that is, when you kind of heard about this project that he was doing, what made you want to join the Secret Society of Leading Ladies?
It's so different, isn't it? It's fully like that Bandersnatch on Netflix, the Black Mirror thing. It's so clever. And I think, you know, like you say, there's so many amazing concerts kind of dotted around here and there online or on TV at the moment. And that is amazing. But actually, Ryan is a genius for thinking this idea. Like, I just think it's so clever and so different. And where people might, you know, be really missing that kind of opportunity to go and see live theatre. So they, you know, they've watched so many concerts online to try and get that kind of feeling. But you can't get that feeling. You can't get the kind of full experience of going to live theatre. So I think what Ryan's done is so clever, because he's just thought, well, we're not going to be able to create that feeling from people's homes. So why don't we just kind of go full with this kind of interactive, immersive experience? And it's just such a clever way of still kind of, you know, A, giving actors something to do, giving actors the work that we've been like hoping for, and then B, like giving to the audience members who have been missing the theatre something a bit different that isn't trying to kind of replicate the feeling of a live experience at home, because you just can't. So I just think it's so clever.
If you can explain it. So you've got this bunch of amazing leading ladies, so much talent, it's ridiculous.
Oh my god, I know.
And you kind of
actually know the lineup, and when I was filming it, I was like, come on then, so like, give me the full lineup. And at every name that Ryan said, I was like, no, okay, like, it was just so exciting.
And I love, you've got people from all different, people done West End, people have done touring, people have done all different pockets of the industry, and just so much talent. It's like one of the best lineups I've seen for anything ever. It's so exciting.
It really is.
And the audience kind of get to choose what characters they want to watch, and they can choose any kind of combination and any kind of order. So every single audience member almost will have a completely different experience.
Yeah,
and obviously, exactly. I mean, my struggle is, I'm like, well, how the hell am I going to choose? But you can get this group ticket, so you can watch it over three nights and see everybody.
The multi-stream.
So it's like, you're totally right. It's so amazing. I want to know what goes on inside Ryan's brain, right?
I know. Me too. I think, do you know what? I've always really envied people who have that, like, imagination to just completely come up with a concept and an idea from nothing. Like, I feel like, for me, I'm actually, you know, because I write music and write lyrics and things, but and so that element of kind of creativity, I feel like I can understand, but I've been able to just create a concept from nothing. And you know, what my flatmate is a screenwriter, actually, and the kind of ideas that she comes up with for her short films and her, you know, series and things, I'm like, how have you just brought that idea into existence? And it's such a, I really envied it. And that's like you say, that's what Ryan does. He's just kind of thought, that no one's doing that, so I will. It's so clever.
Ever wondered what it takes to make it in the movie business? Peel back the curtain with 4-6 Success Filmmaking. 4-6 Success Filmmaking is where filmmakers share their stories and the secrets.
It's beyond competitive out there.
There have been movies that it's taken me 10 years to get made.
Don't wait to create. Like, you've got to just keep making stuff.
Tune in to 4-6 Success Filmmaking for your dose of cinematic realness, direct from the voices that have lived it.
What clue can you give us? What can people expect without giving anything away that you're not allowed to give away?
Well, so I bought a coat for the shoot. And
I hope it wasn't from H&M.
No, it wasn't. Oh my God. It wasn't. But so it was really funny actually, because I text Ryan saying, now listen, because he'd essentially said that the Barn Theatre had kind of a little budget. So if we needed anything to kind of be for costume, to let him know, and he could kind of order some things through the theatre's budget. And I found this coat and it was rather expensive. And I was like, now listen, Ryan, how big is the budget? Because I think this coat is ideal for the character, but if it's a no from the theatre budget, then I'm gonna need you to help me convince myself to buy it. And he was like, well, to be honest, Lauren, you know, it'll be an all-weather coat, spring or autumn or winter, you know, it's an all year round buy. It's from the Weekday Sustainability Collection, so really you're saving the planet. I was like, okay, yeah, okay. So yeah, I did buy that coat just specifically for the shoot, and I'm glad that I did. But yeah, so it's a green trench coat, and that is your clue.
Okay. Well, now I'm even more excited. I need to see this coat. I'm very good friends with a lovely person called Rebecca Levy.
Oh, yes.
She always talks about this really stagey sixth form that she went to, where literally it sounds like, I don't understand, because it's basically this normal, just a normal sixth form, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
In her, in your year, because you were in her year, you performed Remember Monday, and there's other people as well who went off to train and are doing like wonderful things. And I can't imagine it. I feel like in my mind it's like Glee, but it's what was it? explain it to me. Explain what happened. Explain kind of your background.
sure. Yeah. So obviously, you know, we met on the performing arts A level. So, you know, like you say, it was a normal sixth form. I also did like English literature and Spanish, and you know, so it was only kind of how many hours a week that we were in a class together? Maybe 6 hours a week. Mm-hmm. But aside from our actual performing arts A level, there was this thing called MTC, the Musical Theatre Company. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you had to audition to get into this MTC, and we just ended up with just like the best group of people. And actually, my experience of kind of anything to do with school up until that sixth form was really quite awful, and I never really had a group of friends that, you know, I felt like I could be myself around, or that, you know. Yeah, so that group of friends was, like you say, literally Glee, but also like it was just the best time of my life at that point, because I felt like I was finally with people who, you know, I could be myself around and who understood what I was doing and what I thought was normal. But obviously no one around me up until that point had thought that it was normal. And you know, so it was just that we were such good mates, and I was so grateful to those girls, you know, just for kind of allowing me to be myself. And I think we all did that for each other. You know, we weren't kind of Miss Popular in our senior school or whatever. We'd all kind of come from that same place of being a bit of an outcast, and we just kind of allowed each other to be our best selves, you know. And it was just such a lovely group of people. And yeah, we like, I mean, Becca Levy is just she's one of those brains that I'm just like, how do you write that music? She's so clever.
She'll text me like, I'm not feeling that great today, so I've just written a song. Like, I'm
yeah.
like, and it's a bop.
She's so clever. She's so clever. It's such a bop. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, we were really lucky with the group that we had, because actually, you know, without tooting my own horn, we were a talented bunch of people, but actually there was none of that kind of competitiveness that sometimes comes with those kind of people that, you know, we were all auditioning for the same drama schools at the same time, and there was never any shade. There was never any like, oh my God, well, you know, Bella got into Erdang and I didn't get into Erdang, blah, 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 blah. And it was just like, it was just so lovely and supportive, and we were so thrilled for each other's successes. It was just such a great setup to then go into kind of further training in the industry in general. So yeah, I'll always be really grateful for
that. It speaks for itself, I think, to see how far you've all come. It's really, it's really unusual to see a bunch of young people like that go off and
totally
all do so well. It's so cool.
We definitely have our teacher to thank as well, Jenny Hicks. Oh, she's not Jenny Hicks anymore. She was Jenny Hicks when we were there. I think she's now Jenny Loopery, and she was our performing arts teacher, and she also ran the MTC, and she was just so great, and she, you know, properly, bless her, like we were so bad in terms of our actual like college classes. You know, we'd like not turn up to a musical theatre lesson or performing arts class, and she'd just come into a studio and we'd all be there just like doing our own thing, and she'd be like, are you coming into class today, girls? And we'd be like, no, Jenny, we're just gonna do our own thing. She'd be like, okay, have fun. Like, she just totally allowed us to be ourselves and express ourselves, and it was just so brilliant. It was so brilliant.
I would say my favorite memories of my music A-level classes was eating a sausage roll with my teacher, watching Alison Hammond clips on YouTube this morning. And I think there are moments like that when your teachers like allow you to grow that you just really appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. I mean, I remember the performing arts like coursework that we had to do was pretty crazy. It wasn't kind of, you know, particularly vocational. There was a lot of written coursework, which obviously we were just like, oh, can't we just sing a song and get graded on that? But no, we had to write a 70-page, you know, document on I don't know, acting through song or something, I don't know. Mm. And all of us would do the exact same thing, which is that we would just stay up the entire night before the deadline, and we'd all be just messaging each other on like Facebook or whatever in our group, thinking like, what have you guys put for this section, because I'm really struggling and it's now 4 a.m. and then we'd all kind of walk into our class, hand it in, and then fall asleep. Like, she was just so brilliant, because she really did, you know, she was one of those teachers who kind of said, listen, girls, this is what we need to do for the course, but actually she allowed us to do the things that would benefit us the most in terms of actually learning and kind of learning about our craft. You know, she understood that actually while we had to do a certain thing to be able to get the A level, she wanted us to spend our time doing what was going to be most useful for us in our career, you know, rather than you know, learning how to structure a paragraph properly, which I've not needed to do since 2013, you know. So yeah.
And who was this Lauren back then in terms of your voice and your kind of what you wanted to do? Because when I came and saw the UK Tour of Six for the first time, after Heart of Stone and after the show, I remember sitting there being like, who is this girl giving me Carrie Underwood? Who is this kind of insane...
I remember you tagging me in that Insta story, and I was literally like, I turned around to everyone in the dressing room and I was like, guys, somebody's just compared me to Carrie Underwood. This is the best day.
But it's true. I love Carrie Underwood, but we never hear kind of voices or that kind of style over here, and especially I haven't heard anyone like that in MT before.
And
that's such a cool influence, and now obviously we'll discuss it. The shows that you've done, I guess, have allowed you to explore different kind of genres of music and different kind of styles of singing to your traditional MT, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
But what was your, is that something that you've found as your career has progressed, or is that literally kind of the voice you've had since you started singing when you were however old?
I suppose it could be potentially a combination of both. I think I always was a diehard Taylor Swiftie, and then and so I kind of grew up listening to that kind of style music, very kind of country, folk, pop kind of thing. And so I always kind of replicated those kind of styles when I was singing, you know, and then when I started writing my own stuff, which was, again, quite a young age, because, you know, I was totally inspired by Taylor Swift and I was like, I'm going to be the next singer-songwriter. And so when I did start writing my own stuff, it kind of naturally took that route. And then when I got to GSA and kind of started training, I realized that actually I had, you know, developed some habits that were potentially not so sustainable and healthy, in terms of when you want to do 8 shows a week.
What were you doing?
Oh my God, I was just shouting. And I really remember there was one MTC show, actually, funnily enough, where I did that... what's that Scott Allen song? Is it called Home? The one that's like, so hold me in your heart. That
yeah,
one.
It's just trying to be.
Yes, exactly. And I remember so clearly, because Holly from Remember Monday, obviously her and Charlotte were both there. They both witnessed it. And at the time they were, you know, like, oh, Loz, yeah, no, yeah, it sounds really great. And then a couple of years later when I listened to it back, and I was like, that's a nodule popping out of that vocal cord right there. Ooh. Why did no one tell me? And they were like, yeah, it was slightly shouty. And they were like, it still sounded great, but there was some damage happening there, So I think, you know, I just never had a singing lesson, really. I'd kind of always just gone, oh, well, I think that sounds nice, so I'll do it that way. But when I got to GSA, they kind of... It was really weird, because especially in the first year of GSA, I literally was like, oh my God, I'm awful. I can't sing at all, because they totally, you know, broke me down, and not broke me down in a psychological way, but in a, you know, vocal technique way. I had to kind of start from scratch. And so for those 3 years, it was kind of building good technique. And then when I left drama school, I think I sounded very different to how I always had, because I was so worried about making sure that vocally I would be able to sustain, you know, a career. And then over the past maybe 3 years or so, I would say, probably actually when I did Beautiful, the Carole King musical, because that was really that kind of folky style that, you know, and that kind of brought me back into my roots a little bit. And so then I've had to kind of work out how to do the things that I was always doing when I was younger with my voice, and use the technique that I then learned at GSA, so that I'm not wrecking the old vocal folds, bless them, you know. So I suppose it's kind of both. I've had to kind of take things that I've learned and put them onto kind of the way that I have always sounded, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. How do you feel with what is often required in musical theatre now? Because I think a lot of, I'm not bashing you writing for a second, we love new writing, we're so here for it, but so much new writing is really belty and higher and even getting riffier, and all these complicated things are happening left, right and centre. And sometimes I love your classic, like Jason Robert Brown, I love Bridges, Madison County, you have a lovely leading soprano role, and to hear that in a slightly different genre is really exciting and stuff. So what kind of music gets you excited, and how do you feel about where things are going?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, one thing that popped into my brain just then when you said about, you know, things have to keep getting higher and riffier and etc. I think you're right, but also there is so many examples of, and the one that just popped into my head was She Used to Be Mine, where actually sometimes the most kind of heartfelt and the thing that you can connect to the most isn't this mental, big, high, belty riff. Yeah. It's the one that kind of, oh, just, you know, tugs at the heartstrings. And I think as long as we also acknowledge those kind of moments in shows and allow for that, you know, then you can have your I Didn't Plan It, and you can, you know, put the flipping, what am I trying to say, you know, biggest, highest notes in there with the biggest riffs. Yeah, exactly. But then you have to have the contrast, don't you? Because actually then that's when that becomes exciting, is when we haven't heard it yet in the show. So I think you're right. If we get to a point where all you're ever hearing is people belting a top A and riffing up there, yeah, you're right. It's gonna it's going to be boring, isn't
it? Guess,
because
yeah.
if it's too much of the same.
And it's going to damage people's voices as well. Because I guess I'm one of those people who's guilty of, I absolutely live for a belty note.
Oh,
for
me too.
Big riff and stuff. I'm terrible. But on the flip side, I guess people who are looking into it are like, oh my gosh, so I've got to be able to do that crazy thing if I want to succeed. And it's actually, no, there's definitely space for all different voice types, isn't there? And all different styles.
Oh, 100%. And I think, you know, because since obviously the start of the pandemic, I've taken on so many kind of one-to-one singing students, and that is always a fear, I think, that, you know, especially for girls who kind of come to me and they go, oh, you know, but I can't belt a G. And I'm like, babe, no one can belt a G. A woman's voice has maybe two notes in it that are their true belt, and then anything higher you use the thin folds, and they help us out, and we don't need to belt anything. And there's a way of kind of essentially, you know, faking it that will sound just as good to anyone.
It's an illusion.
Yeah, exactly. The healthy mix. We love a healthy mix, you know. Yeah. But it is so true. There's more and more pressure on people to just be able to hit these crazy high notes. And like you say, actually, some of the best, you know, most, you know, the music that we feel that we can connect to the most is the opposite of that. Sometimes you love it, like you say, sometimes you love a big high note and you want to, like, you know, it makes you feel that like excitement, but then actually something that you feel you can maybe connect to more is something that is more relatable to you, you know. So I'm trying to think of an example, even in terms of like non-musical theatre stuff, like the stuff that I listen to in general is like Fleetwood Mac stuff, like Stevie Nicks, she's an alto, do you know? And that stuff for me is like stuff that I can really feel like I connect to. So yeah, it's I think it's good to have both, isn't it? It's good to kind of acknowledge that there is a real technique to being able to do different things. And like you say, you know, sopranos at the moment are kind of the in thing, and they're on the up, and people are thinking, oh god, I need to be able to do that. But I always think, play to your strengths, and if that's not you, then you don't need to force it.
Have you got a soprano in you?
Absolutely not, love. I wish I did. I wish. So Holly from Remember Monday, obviously she just was playing Christine in the UK tour before the COVID happened, and we were just laughing because a couple of people have said, oh well, you know, why don't you swap roles, or you know, why don't Holly you do Jane Seymour in Six, and Lauren you do Christine on tour. And I was just like, I would love to try, and you would laugh. I haven't got it in me, unfortunately.
Tell me about when you graduated and you're in like the big wide world, and your first few jobs are amazing. I mean, like, beautiful. So many people that I've spoken to in part of Beautiful just love that music and love that.
Yeah,
it's a really lovely show. And also, you know, like Sunny Afternoon as well. I love Sunny Afternoon. I adore that.
So do I.
Need it to come back.
I think it is. But I think it was supposed to be this year, wasn't it? It was supposed to be on tour again.
I think people
I think hopefully next year it'll be on its way out again. But yeah, those shows were so brilliant. And I'd never heard of Sunny Afternoon before I got the job. That was a real quick turnaround, actually, because they'd already started before. When was it that they started? I think they started in June, when just as I was graduating, they started rehearsals and things. And they'd obviously auditioned way back in kind of the early part of the year, when I wasn't auditioning at that time. I was, you know, still in drama school, and somebody dropped out in around September time, or end of August, beginning of September, and I got the call from my agent, and they said, "Oh, can they see you later this week?" And I had to learn a load of guitar stuff, a load of like songs, and then there was a dance call, and there was only like four people in for it, and they had all already been in for it back when they were auditioning the first time. And so I was terrified. It was like one of my first ever auditions, and all these girls already knew the routine that we were learning, and I was like, and that was on the Friday, and then I got the call that evening to say, Lauren, they want to put you on hold. They're just sending your tapes over to Ray Davies, you know, as you do, or whoever it was that needed to check my tapes. And so then by the Saturday, I'd found out that I'd got the job, and then I started rehearsals on the Monday, and then I was on tour with them by like the Thursday, because they really needed someone in there quick. I mean, luckily I didn't go on straight away because I was a swing. Right. That, but yeah, it was quite stressful, especially for my first job. I was like, is this how it always goes?
Do you think you kind of took it in and were learning? Or you were literally kind of like, what the hell is happening? And you kind of just got through it. How did you deal with it?
Yeah, I think it was very like, didn't think about it until afterwards, because I didn't have a second free in my brain. I was trying to learn how to play the banjo for the first time in my life in 3 days, you know, so it was things like that. And the trumpet, I had to learn to play the trumpet. Do you know what I mean? So I just didn't have a second
so bad.
Free. Yeah. So I just didn't have a second to think about it. And then a couple of months later, I went on for the first time, and I went on as Raza, who's kind of the female lead, and she's the wife of Ray, and it was only after I went on for the first time that I was like, oh my god, that was a lot of pressure. But actually, it was just one of those things where you don't think about it, you just kind of had to do it, and there was no choice as to whether or not I would be able to. I just had to learn it, you know? Mm. And it was a massive learning curve as well, because it was my first time being a swing. So I had to learn, you know, not just one part. And we didn't really cover anything to do with being a swing in GSA. So I was learning to do that on the job as well. I had to cover 4 tracks, you know, none of them luckily were particularly dancey, because I think that would, I mean, if I'd done the same thing with like Wicked, with all their crazy dance swings, you know, it probably would have been a very different story. But yeah, it was good. And I think, you know, so much of this industry is about learning on the job. Mm. I think, again, with my one-to-one students at the moment, and so many of them are kind of auditioning for drama schools, and they're thinking, oh, you know, but that might not be the right place for me, and you know, that might not be kind of the best school. I might not be able to learn, you know, everything that I want to learn. And I'm like, well, yeah, you might not. You're right. There might be another place that's better suited for you. But also, it's not that you go to drama school and you learn everything and then you go off and work and never learn anything again in your life. You're set. Like, we learn so much on the job. And you know, that is the most important time to be learning stuff, I think. And every single job that I've done, I've learned so much from the people around you on stage and from the process and from working with different creatives, and I think that's so important to remember, that actually we never should stop learning. We should never think, oh good, I'm done now. It's so much that, you know, every experience you have in this industry, even if it's a, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but even if it's a really crap experience, you know, even if it's absolutely just the worst process and you know, experience of your life, you learn from that as well. So yeah, so those kind of, that first job was such a learning curve for me. Mm. And probably, you know, one of the most difficult kind of jobs that I've kind of had in my career so far.
And then going forwards, what was your relationship like with swinging? Because you swung again on Beautiful, and mm-hmm. you were dance captain on Blondel as well at the Union. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to other people, like actually Carly Mercedes Dyer, who's taking over from you.
Yes! And
when she was on here, you know, she swung, she was a dance captain for years, and she said she got to this place where she found that people, like, you know, people were finding her useful. And she was like, oh, I'm really pleased I can be of use, but actually there are other things that I want to do. And then she had this amazing breakup moment in Dreamgirls and has soared kind of since. So what were you like living your best life as a swing? Because lots of people, I'm not bashing swinging at all. Swinging is incredible and so difficult. I literally bow down to anybody that can do it. So where were you at?
I've always said, I think that everyone should have to swing at some point in their career. And I do think that it is such a brilliant thing to have to do first, for that to be your first experience in a job. You learn to respect every single person on that stage and off the stage as well. There is nobody in a company that is disposable or that, you know, it isn't needed. Sorry, I just don't know if anybody's home, but the Hoover's just turned on, so that's a bit scary. There's a ghost. Anyway, yeah, so there is nobody in a company that would be thought of as disposable, and you really learn that as a swing. And I think that is something that, you know, it's understandable, but when people graduate into these amazing roles and they you know, shoot straight to the top, you don't understand the kind of work that every single person in the company has to do for you to be able to go on stage and wow the audience every night, you know? And so it's such a valuable learning experience to be a swing. I personally did struggle with it, and I, you know, my brain was always kind of erring on the side of, oh God, I can't believe I'm sat in a dressing room. This isn't what I want to be doing. But like I said, I wouldn't change it because I learned so much, you know, doing that. And actually, both of my swinging experiences were really quite different. With Sunny Afternoon, it was really tough because I rarely went on. I think I did in the 10 months that I was in that contract, I think I did about maybe 15 shows, wow, somewhere in the realms of 15 yeah. to 20 shows. And so that's tough, you know, but also off stage, there was 8 of us that were those off stage swings. And off stage, we had our own stuff that we were doing and that we were learning. And I, you know, like I say, I learned to play the banjo for the show, but I kept that up in my time off stage. My guitar playing, like, was so much better by the end of that contract than it was at the beginning. And you know, we wrote, because everyone was a musician in that show, that's the one thing that I absolutely loved about that show, was that everyone played live, and it was just so incredible, full out like concert, you know. And so, you know, we were all musicians backstage, and it was just like everyone just had a jam session every day. So it was an incredible experience. But also, obviously, you feel like you miss out, you know, when someone comes to watch the show who's like a celebrity or whatever, and you know, they kind of look at you like, what did you do in the show? I didn't see you on the stage. You know, it's that kind of thing. Or, you know, coming out of stage door and people being there like, was she in the show? I don't remember. So it's kind of those things. They you know, it's a shame because you...
It was beautiful. It was beautiful different.
Beautiful was different. Yeah, it was... I was on much more often with Beautiful. You know, I had a guaranteed show every week, which was great. So I could invite people to come and watch when I was Betty, given a bit of Betty. And then I was also understudying Cynthia and Carol. So there was constant kind of cover rehearsals for those two parts, which were obviously, you know, the two female leads. So they were great fun to be able to rehearse and things. I covered I covered Betty, Marilyn, Cynthia and Carol. And Betty and Marilyn were the two kind of female ensemble tracks. They weren't necessarily on, sort of, they were featured, you know, smaller roles, and they were both so much fun. And so because I was on so much more often, I kind of felt like I was more part of the cast, more part of the team, that is something that you struggle with as a swing, is that you feel like you're separate from the cast, because, you know, they'll be on stage having their like jokes and, you know, all the amazing things that get to happen on stage when you've settled into a role, and then you can kind of start to just have a bit of a, you know, have fun and mess around, and you feel like you miss those things as a swing. So yeah, Beautiful is different in that I felt more a part of it because I was on so often. But you know, then it was tricky as well, because I with Beautiful, I never got to go on as Cynthia or Carol. So that was tricky. That, you know, the two roles that I would have really loved to go on for, I never got a chance. So it is a tough experience being a swing and being a cover in general. But actually, I just think it's so valuable and so worthwhile for everyone to, like I say, experience it, because you just learn so much respect. And I will never ever allow anyone to talk about swings or say that they are less important to the company.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if it wasn't for swings, shows would have to be cancelled constantly. And, you know, there is something in the industry that does happen, which is, if you have been a swing for a while, people see that as, you are so valuable because your brain is so, you know, like Jen Coldwell, that woman's brain, I don't I cannot comprehend it. She knew all six tracks of six in that cast before I even knew my one. Yeah. So she, like, her brain is just incredible. And she was built for that kind of job. And she loves it. You know, it is, everyone is obviously different. And she absolutely loves it. Is she talented enough to play a lead role? Absolutely. But her skills of, you know, being able to multi-role is so much more valuable than someone who, you know, doesn't have that kind of brain and doesn't have that kind of ability, you know? So it is tricky. It's tricky to kind of get out of the swing pigeonhole, you know? But yeah, I was very, very lucky with six.
Where were you at? So what happened after you finished Beautiful? Was it like a conscious thing of you saying to your agent, right, you know, I really want something else now? Did it come up? Like, how, what happened?
I did say to my agent, I said, you know, I don't really want to be considered for Swing anymore. So if that is the case with anything that I'm being put in for, I'd rather not go in for it. And actually, I had a year out after Beautiful. I had a year out because Remember Monday, we're going on The Voice. And we kind of just decided that all three of us, you know, we were all kind of in work. I'd actually been offered a job at that point, and I said no to it because actually we were just determined to kind of make it our year and focus 100% on the band, which was actually a really lovely thing to do. And I think because I'd, you know, finished 2 years of touring, it was quite nice to be settled for a little while and just work on things that I felt creatively fulfilled by. So yeah, that was really great. And then when I kind of came back into the industry and I kind of said to the agent, hello, you can put me in for things again now. there were things that, you know, I'd been potentially seen for before, where they were considering me for Swing, and I just said, okay, let's not put me in for that then. So it is tricky because you have to weigh up, you know, do you want to be in work or do you want to be doing the work that you want, you know? And a lot of the time you just think, I want to be in work, because of course you do. You want to be able to buy a house one day and have a pension, and do you know what I mean? So those things are kind of, pushing you to always go where the work is, but actually sometimes you really have got to do the things that you know will be, like I said, more creatively fulfilling.
And it paid off time.
Yeah.
Were you aware of six? Did you know that's something you wanted to do? Like,
do you know what? This is awful because I love the show with my entire heart and soul now. But when I first, so obviously I knew Grace and I knew Maya because, you know, was it 2 years below me at GSA or one? I can't remember. But, and then Grace had actually also gone to Farm for Sixth Form. So, I know. So I knew a couple of people in it and I kind of, ever since it was kind of announced that they were in the cast, in my brain, I was like, oh my God, I must go and see, you know, my friends in that show. I've got to go and see it at some point. But I'd been on tour and then I'd been, you know, doing the band stuff and kind of taking some time away from theatre. And so I just hadn't gotten around to it, which was stupid. When was this? It would have been 2019, beginning of 2019, I think, you know, maybe like February, March time. That was kind of when we started auditioning again after being on The Voice. And I was in for six. I was called in for six and I hadn't seen it. I'd kind of listened to the soundtrack and got to House of Holbein and was like, what on earth is this show about? I was so confused. And, you know, I'd seen the Mega Six online and I was like, oh, I don't know if that's my cup of tea, you know? So I was called in for it and I was like, you know, may as well. But I was also at the time in for Matilda, and I'd been in for Matilda kind of 3 years in a row and always got to finals and always just like been so desperate to cover Miss Honey. And I still would love to do that job at some point. It's one of my kind of bucket list jobs. And I was in for Matilda and six at the same time. And I was kind of progressing through both of them, you know, kind of simultaneously. And it got to the point where I was in finals for both shows. And I totally had my heart set on Matilda. And I was thinking, you know, God, third year in the finals, like surely this will be the year where it happens, you know. And one day my friend Eve, she called me and she was like, Loz, have you heard from Matilda? And I was like, no, why? And she said, oh, well, my friend has just heard that she got the cover Miss Honey track. And I was like, oh, I was absolutely really, really gutted, like heartbroken. And then later that day I was in work and my agent phoned and I was like, oh, here comes the I'm sorry you didn't get the job phone call. And I picked up the phone and he went, hi, Lauren, darling, I'm just calling you with an offer from Six. And I was like, what? I was like, what, are you joking? And so, you know, it was obviously roller coaster of emotions on that day. But so then when I got the job, I then thought, probably should go and see the show then, I guess. And I went to see it. And I was like, I get it. I get the hype. I understand. I fell totally in love with the show at that point. And luckily, I did get to see Grace and Mayer in it on that day when I first went to watch it.
Who was your Jane?
Natalie. She's, incredible. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, brilliant. So, and yeah, when I watched it, I was like, I just totally, you know, I was like, immediately so excited to then be part of it, you know. So that's I always say, you know, everything happens for a reason. That's so my motto to live by, and it just proves that every time I kind of think of an example of that, that's the one I go to. Because had I got the job that my heart was set on, I would never have had this incredible experience and been in the show with people that I will genuinely like be friends with for the rest of my life, you know. Like that whole experience, I mean, COVID aside, was the best, you know, experience in my career that I've ever had. And I'm so grateful that it happened the way that it did. So yeah,
it's spooky when you think, when you kind of think too much into like what if.
I know. Yeah,
but totally. What I like I said, you really put your own stamp in it, and all of you, the six of you, all completely kind of did your own thing, and it felt so fresh and so different. When did you kind of realize that you could, like, oh, okay, I can maybe find my own way of doing this? How much freedom was there? What was that kind of like? Because it is quite unusual within a show to actually see completely different people and completely different voices,
portrayals, characters. Sure. Well, so they were so brilliant, the creatives. From the very first day, they kind of said these characters are exaggerated versions of you. We don't want them to be Lauren. You have to do Natalie Paris's version of Seymour, and you know, the same for everyone else, which was obviously a really lovely thing to hear. But for me, I actually really struggled with that early on in the process. I had massive imposter syndrome. I think because, you know, I'd my career so far had been in a swing role, so I wasn't used to the kind of pressure that having your own, you know, role and you know, each of those roles is as important as the other. It wasn't like I was ensemble, you know, tree five in the background, and you know, I was, you know, one of the six wives. So it was an incredible amount of pressure, and I really did kind of have that kind of feeling of, oh my god, I don't think I'm good enough to be doing this, and I don't think I'm, you know, I can't find that exaggerated version of myself that is good enough for this show. And that kind of stayed with me throughout rehearsals, really. I kind of really didn't get it until the first night that we opened, and we got to the end of Ex-Wives, and like I have never experienced anything like it, and you know, up until that point, where the audience were just completely with us. And that was really the moment where I felt like I was like, oh my god, no, I can just do my version of it, and that will be fine, and I can just be Lauren singing a song that, you know. And it was still, I think my portrayal of that character actually changed a lot over time, as does, you know, that happens with every, you know, character, I think, that you could play, obviously, because, you know, you're not gonna start a show and then 10 months later be doing the exact same thing. You know, it evolves with you as you kind of do it over and over again. But I think my version of that character changed so much in the first couple of months of the tour, as I just kind of grew to understand what, you know, that exaggerated version of myself was. And I think that was probably the kind of first time that I ever really had to do any soul searching and understand who I was that I could put into that character that fit, you know. Because actually I suppose when I first, when we were in rehearsals, I think the reason that I was finding it difficult was because I thought of Jane Seymour as this very demure, motherly, you know, calm woman. And I was like, God, I'm not any of those things. How am I going to do that then? You know, and so it was tricky to kind of, I felt like Lauren and Jane were kind of butting heads a bit. But the wonderful thing was kind of to see how that did evolve over time, and how it turned from, you know, not butting heads to just kind of going along next to each other nicely, the qualities that I think Jane Seymour has and then the qualities that Lauren has, and actually they can fit together, and so it wasn't necessarily that I had to kick Jane Seymour out and just portray Lauren or vice versa. It was kind of finding a way to mold the two, if that makes sense. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think that's so interesting as well, especially because when you look at it on paper, you're like, well, Lauren's in Remember Monday and is used to gigging and performing and does music and stuff, so this would be like, this is could be like a walk in the park for her. Actually no, because you are in it's your first leading role, it's you are kind of dealing with this historical figure, but in this like very different way, and you have freedom, and you are allowed to do your own thing. You're like, well, what is that? How do I bring that all together? It's actually actually a very unique and weird scenario to be in when you think about it, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And also like the additional pressure of being in the rehearsal room with like some of the people that I had admired for years.
Got Lauren Drew, like.
Oh my God. And like Jodie. So Jodie had obviously gone to GSA. She left just before I arrived, actually. But I went to see her graduating show because I'd just found out that I had gotten into GSA. Okay. And I went to see, it was Footloose and she was playing Rusty. And I remember being sat there like front row, like, oh my God, am I going to be like that at the end of 3 years at GFA? And I was just like, so, such a fangirl. Do you know what I mean? And so then I kind of came into the rehearsal room and she was there and I was like, oh my God, that's Rusty from Footloose. And I was just so like I say, the imposter syndrome totally took over. I was like, I am no way ready enough to be, you know, standing up against these incredible performers. And they all were. And oh, it was just the best, you know, a learning experience, but best kind of process ever. The girls, I just absolutely adore each and every one of them. And I think something that was actually very, very clever about that casting process was that it was awful, actually, in the moment. Essentially, we all had to audition in front of everyone else, which is something that I've never had to experience before. I don't think it's, you know, it's very, very rarely done. I've only ever experienced it with six. And at the time, I was like, this is awful. Why are they putting us through this? But it makes total sense that, like, we ended up with the cast that were just the most supportive, like, amazing group of girls who were just totally there for each other, you know? And I don't think that would have happened if they hadn't been able to see in the room who was going to be there to lift people up and who was going to be there to kind of hope that people messed up their lines or cracked on the big note or, you know, things like that. So it was so clever the way that they cast that. And we ended up with just the best group of girls ever.
And how did you sustain it? Because you are like, not only was your song Heart of Stone a killer and the way you were doing it was full out beyond, but also like Laura, when I had Lauren during this podcast, she was saying about how, you know, it's not just your song, you're literally dancing full out, and the harmonies that you have throughout can be so demanding, so you're singing non-stop, and then you have some of these double show days where it's back to back, and on top of all of that you have all the social media stuff and all this hype and all these people, big expectations and sharing things, so it's like this whole big world, and you're on tour as well, so there's all these things, I guess, mentally, physically. How do you keep going? How do you sustain that over a period of time?
I mean, I was very tired, but also, like, you know, it is one of those things. Luckily, because I'd already been touring twice before, I kind of had those habits down, and I didn't know anything else. I'd only done, you know, that 2 little months in the union for Blondel, but other than that, I'd always been touring, so I didn't have anything to compare it to. So that kind of element for me wasn't so much of a problem because I really had my habits. But yeah, 100%. I mean, vocally, I had to really kind of look after myself. And I think all the girls were the same. We didn't go out and get pissed, you know. We didn't you know, stay up all night. We couldn't, you know. It was too demanding vocally and you know, physically. I think I watched my body change a lot during that show, because I hadn't been dancing that much since I was at drama school. So my body changed a lot during that kind of time very quickly. And so we did, you know, again, have to make sure that, I mean, Lauren Drew at one point, she lost so much weight because she was actually having to deal with a costume that was restricting her movement. And so we had to, she had, you know, big talks with the designers and producers about that, so that we could, you know, if you want us to do our jobs to the best of our ability, then we're going to need to, you know, be able to sustain ourselves physically, you know, eat loads, drink loads of water, just like boring stuff like that, you know, get enough sleep. But you know, like you say, I think the mental side of things was probably harder than the physical side of things, because I think once you've got that kind of thing into your muscle memory, then you can kind of forget about how hard it really is once it's there in your body, vocally as well. But actually, yeah, the mental stuff, I think for me, was probably something that I was just not used to at all. The social media things and you know, pressure to be having this persona online, but also not so much that I'm kind of giving away, you know, the private parts of myself that I want to keep for my friends and family and things. And so it was tricky. And I mean, luckily, we did have, you know, Jodie and Loz in the cast, who were already kind of well versed in that kind of side of things. They did take care of us in that respect. The producers had a kind of social media team that we could go to, if things were becoming a bit overwhelming. We all had a big kind of, you know, PowerPoint presentation at the beginning of the rehearsals to say, you will get lots of followers. Like, here's what to do about it. So, you know, they did really try to help in any way that they could, which was really, really beneficial for us. But it's such a weird one. I think if I could press a magic button and get rid of all social media, I definitely would. But also, it is just in so many aspects, it's just the best thing to, you know, to be a part of. It feels like a massive community, especially with that show, where, you know, you're able to interact with people and in a way that you I've never experienced before. You know, with Sunny Afternoon or Beautiful, you'd get the, you know, fans who would come to the stage door and you know, tell you what they thought in person. But actually, this, you know, this phenomenon that it's become online with Six was just such a different experience, where everyone could tell you what they thought, good and bad, you know. So it is tricky, because in one minute you're getting someone say, oh my god, I came to see the show last night and I thought you were, you know, incredible or whatever, and all these amazing things that just are so heartwarming to read. And then in the next second, you'll look at another message that says, oh, I way preferred Natalie Paris's version. And it's like, don't
there's no warning.
So it is tough, and I think you have to kind of put a little bit of a barrier up there. You can't just go into it with your whole heart with the kind of social media side of things, because, you know, there's too many people out there in the world that are looking for any excuse to bring you down, and that's their problem, not yours. So you have to really keep that wall up to protect yourself, unfortunately. So yeah, I think the longer you kind of have that you know, experience go on for, the more detached I've become from it, but in a good way. And I hope that it still feels like, I hope that people still feel like that they can, you know, chat to me online and that I'm there and I'm present, but also I don't want to give them everything, you know.
Totally. And then hopefully another real big positive is, then, you know, they'll buy tickets to come and see this concert, the Secret Society of Leading Ladies.
Yeah,
they will support Remember Monday and stream Remember Monday's music.
Exactly.
And increase the audience for your other projects as well, and support you and stay loyal, and that is really special.
And the only work that I have had during this time has been through my social media. So I am so grateful for it. Like, I truly am. I'm like, without it, I really would have struggled, you know, financially and not just financially, but mentally, you know, not having anything to do. I really would have struggled. So I am so, so grateful for it. But it is just that kind of thing of having, okay, now I'm going to put that away and I'm going to go back to just being Lauren, not Lauren Byrne 95 on Instagram, you know?
And where are you at now? What's the kind of things that get you excited now, kind of thinking post pandemic when this is happening again? Yeah. What kind of makes you kind of go, okay, yeah, that's something I want to be a part of?
Oh, well, I have got I don't know when I'm going to be allowed to I know, it's so annoying, and I think it's so funny because people are kind of trying to take guesses into why I left Six, and there's a lot of theories, and I don't think anyone's landed on the actual answer yet, which is so that's going to be exciting when I'm finally allowed to kind of you know, give the real reason. So I do have that to look forward to, hopefully whenever that may kind of get up and running. But I think I'm really hoping that the kind of after the pandemic, it will be just this kind of, like, I'm thinking that the Roaring Twenties might make a comeback, you know, and I hope that it's going to be that kind of time where people are just wanting to be happy and wanting to celebrate the end of a really shit time, you know. And obviously I understand that actually during this pandemic, a lot of people have really, really struggled. So I'm hoping that on the other side of that, there will be people who have grown as human beings in this shit time and you know, evolved to a different version of themselves that is actually so much stronger than they were before, because they've come out of it, you know, and not allowed it to kind of affect the rest of their lives. And I think, you know, it's really tricky because obviously, you know, this is my like mid-20s. I'm pretty sure I'm about to have another lockdown birthday. So I'm going to come out of this pandemic 2 years older than I was when I went into it, which is just upsetting. But, you know, like it is something that we all have to kind of allow ourselves to know that everyone's missing the same things. So it's not that some people are going to be ahead. There's no one that's going to be ahead in this time. Everyone's experiencing the same pandemic, apart from New Zealand, who are absolutely smashing it. But you know, so you know, we're all High School Musical quote, we're all in this together. And when we hope that feeling continues after you know, when things can go back to normal, is that we can all push through, you know, together and kind of help each other through. And then when it gets to the good times, we can all be there to celebrate that all together, rather than kind of putting other people ahead, if
absolutely.
That makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Like, it's a horrible thing that's happened, but I hope we can learn and take things forward with us as when things don't just go back to how they were before.
Yes.
But also, I think what my dream would be for some new amazing composer to come through, write some like country-esque MT musical, and then get Lauren Byrne truly living her best Carrie Underwood life in the West
End. Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
And what's happening with Remember Monday at the moment? Have you got more stuff on the way?
We have got stuff on the way.
We need a full
album.
I know
we do. Hey, making music is quite expensive. But yeah, we have got, how many tracks have we got on the way? 3 or 4.
Right.
So there will be some new music coming soon. Yeah, we're looking to kind of, the thing that we don't want to happen is to release them and that be it, because you know we're so proud of these ones that they're kind of already finished. We're just kind of waiting to release them at the right time and make sure that, you know, they get as much kind of credit as we think they deserve, because we're so proud of them. It's kind of, you know, the favorites of our kind of music catalog so far that we're just about to release. So we hope that, you know, other people like them as well.
I can't wait. And do you think in the future, do you think if Six came around again and maybe West End called, do you think, would you go back?
God,
would you finish off the journey?
100%. And do you know what? It was actually really lovely, because when I, you know, obviously did have to make the decision to leave, I was really gutted. And I did say that to everyone. I kind of messaged all the creatives and just said, I'm so sorry. I really love you. And I'm so grateful, you know, and you know, a couple of them came back and said, you know what? This isn't the end. So don't worry. You know, know, I'm sure you'll be back in that dress one day and blah, 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 blah. So I really hope that that is the case. I would absolutely love to go back at some point, whenever that might be.
Mm. Listen, thank you so much. I am so obsessed with your journey from being at the Stagey Six Forms, all the cool things that you've done and learned. And I think it's so exciting to think, you know, what else could be happening. And yeah, it's amazing. I'm pleased there's a lot of support behind you and there's great things happening. Yeah. And you're working with great people. And yeah, there's lots more to come.
Hope so.
Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can see Lauren in the Secret Society of Leading Ladies online between the 22nd of February and the 7th of March. Just visit the Barn Theatre's website for info and tickets. You can follow Lauren on Instagram at laurenburn95 and make sure you go and check out Remember Monday on Spotify if you haven't listened to their music. It is great. It was such a pleasure to speak to Lauren. She is a dream and I really appreciate her giving up some time to record the episode. If you enjoyed this episode of In The Frame, please hit that subscribe button and make sure you leave a little Apple Podcast rating and review. You can follow West End Frame on Twitter, Instagram and on Facebook. For more chat about the Secret Society of Leading Ladies, tune in to the return of our other podcast, The West End Frame Show, on Tuesday when I'll be joined by director Ryan Carter. And I'll be back next week for In The Frame with another incredible guest. Thank you for listening.